Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know like,
nothing
like...
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay? Well, then what's the point of...
Scott Russo. What would be the point of that?
What's the point of giving the Rockers theme? I don't know! You know what? I'm from now on just going to read. And if you want to comment, be my guest.
Just read things that are up to date. How about that?
Just shut up. I'm done. I'm not talking about it.
I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard. And just let her cry. Tears fall down my ring. Let her see.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and we have another great night planned for you here. To do that, I need to bring in the man who's got more fake girlfriends than his idol, Manti Te'o. That is, of course, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm good, JR. Hopefully better than him or the Notre Dame Athletic Department. What a wonderful season. And in the last 2 weeks, from them getting mollywhomped by Alabama to... the rumors that Brian Kelly wanted to go to the Eagles. Thank God another schmuck took that job. Good luck with that, Chip Kelly. And to this, which I can't even wrap my head around. I tried to read the story today from the Twitter link you sent me. I don't even know what it's about. I mean, who made up what? There's some guy that tweeted two different women. And this is all coming
from someone with experience in this, right? From you?
Okay. Well, yeah, but I don't use Polynesian women. I use American. You know, it's easy to, you know, you make up fake names. I mean, but for the most part, at least I let it go for a quite long time and cover my tracks. Anyway, welcome everyone to episode 191 of the Place to Be Podcast.
Yeah.
The weather sucks out here in the Northeast, which makes sense considering who our guest is.
Always.
Because he always comes on when there's some type of tsunami or something, some other nor'easter. But he's always he's the best when he comes on. So why don't we bring him in, JR, and go back to the era of attitude.
The one and only, the voice of Ring of Honor, Double K, Kevin Kelly. Welcome back.
I'm as sure for the weatherman as, you know, making a run on the store for bread and eggs and milk. When you know I'm going to be on PTB, you know that bad weather's coming. So
I'm kind of afraid when we get into the summer and you're appearing on these shows, what the hell we're going to get. I mean, snow is one thing, but it's going to get ugly. So
it'll be anything. But listen, real quick, Scott, on the whole Manti Te'o thing, it's okay if you have fake girlfriends. Really, seriously, I don't judge you. Nobody's going to judge you. It's all right. Come clean. How many fake girlfriends have you had?
14.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. But they vary in nationality and, you know.
The first one started back in 1927. It was during the vote for Herbert Hoover. He faked the ballot.
Exactly. And there was a rumor. And Amelia Earhart was, I started tweeting her in 1930 after she disappeared. She didn't disappear. She was in my house. So
I got to make I got to start one of those Tumblr accounts or something. Scott's old tweets. It'll be from like tweets from the 20s from you.
Had a great lunch with A. Carnegie. Yes.
Still
he's
poor.
He's a real crackerjack.
Yeah. He didn't like that Hackenschmidt gotch match, that son of a bitch. I gave it a 6, and he gave it a 2. All right.
Hashtag what? Steak tartare. So.
All right, Kevin is with us, as always, to go through some old-school WWF. We are halfway through 1998 with our vintage vaults. We just finished Fully Loaded earlier this week. So, Kev, we got a list of questions. We know we're limited on time tonight, so we're going to kind of go lightning round with you. That cool?
All right, let's do it.
All right, okay. So we're going to start early in 98. Of course, we left off. After Montreal, we wrapped up 97 last time you were with us. So let's kick things off with the big dogs. Shawn Michaels was set to feud with Owen Hart. It looked like Owen coming back at DX pay-per-view, and they had a little feud, had a match to close the year out. Why did Michaels in that feud with Owen not really continue, and they transitioned him over to Triple H?
It was all having to do with Shawn. Everything at that point was Shawn. He was very, very difficult to work with, and that's why that feud got scuttled.
So nothing to do with getting Hunter over. It was more because he just didn't want to work with Owen.
Well, he wanted to work with Triple H instead of Owen, put it that way. But anything that was laid before him, yeah, I'll do this. No, I don't want to do that.
Okay.
That was it. Was a symptom of the times.
Makes sense.
Now, one super quick follow-up. What's funny is he got the better deal out of this. You know, he escaped unscathed from Montreal. He got what he wanted. Brett's gone. What could possibly, unless it's the meds, what could possibly keep him still pissed off? He got what he wanted. He's the big dog now. He's the head in charge, and he's still angry? I never understood that.
Let's go back to even before that, the whole incident at Madison Square Garden with the click. He was unscathed from that.
Yeah.
And he was – nothing ever touched him. The only one that got the heat for that was Triple H.
Yep.
Cost him the King of the Ring. It's amazing. Shawn had this remarkable ability to be able to wriggle off the hook with Vince. Vince would say, you've done this, this, and this, and Shawn would come back and yell and scream. And by the end of it, like, Vince was almost apologetic to Shawn. They had this – I never saw any of these meetings, but everybody who was ever there for them always described him. Vince had a different relationship with Shawn than anybody else. So everything – when you could say, why did this happen? Why did that happen? A lot of it had to do with Vince's ability to manipulate Vince McMahon like no one else.
Crazy to think about. Someone actually had that much control over Vince, but
probably more than Hogan.
Yeah.
Very strange. Okay, next, Kevin. What were your thoughts on the weird and unusual gimmick change for Goldust?
I didn't like it. I didn't understand it. I think he was messing with a good thing for the sake of it. I don't know whether there was some external pressure, meaning from within the company, to be different, to go perhaps less quote unquote, gay or whatever however you want to describe his character. I'm not sure, but they wanted to make it less gimmicky. Maybe it was a Vince Russo. I know he and Russo were very close. So perhaps through conversation between the two of them, let's make it more human, more real. And, that's why they started to change with the formula. They never quite got it back.
What did you think when he started doing the impress? I mean, the stuff with, you know, Dusty is pretty well documented. He came out as Dusty Dust that one week, and just a lot of weird stuff with him going on at that point.
The guy was a main event caliber athlete who was a comedy sideshow act. But then again, he probably wasn't main event card material by that point anymore. Mm. So that might have been what he was, you know, best suited for at that point.
And I'm actually reading his book now, the Crossroads book, and he was not in a good place. This is when he really started to not be in a good place. He stopped talking to Dusty at that point, and he was, you know, him and
Terry Reynolds.
Terry, I couldn't remember real name. Terry were having their issues, and he was missing Dakota. He was popping pills, so obviously he was getting to that point now where he wasn't really all together anyway at that point.
Exactly, and that was, I'm sure, what led to a lot of the internal. The internal problems leading to physical changes on the exterior, which weren't for the better.
All right, I can't remember if we talked about this last time. I don't think we did. Your thoughts on the NWA gimmick with Jim Cornette. Was it meant to last? Was it meant to be anything serious? Or was it really, you know, has been rumored and has been ripped up by Cornette as a joke by Vince Russo? Do you think it could have gone anywhere significant?
No, it was meant as a joke by Vince Russo, and it was all sort of done tongue-in-cheek. I thought it was good for what it was, and I think Cornette was smart enough to realize pretty quickly on that it was kind of a joke. So what he tried to do was get as many of the people that he knew and liked paydays out of it. So that's why you saw the Rock and Roll Express. That's why you saw people like Dennis Carluzzo on TV and Howard Brody on TV. Cornette knew what the deal was, and so he took advantage of it as best he could. But it was interesting because I think it was a precursor to what eventually became the brand extension.
Mm-hmm.
And when WCW was bought, and you started to realize the power of interpromotional rivalries really within the WWF for the first time, Because nowhere and no other time had they ever really recognized, except for, you know, when his dad had taken over. But since the national expansion in the mid-'80s, they had pretty much wiped the face of the earth of anybody else other than themselves. So to see them reach out and recognize another group like that wasn't, you know, other than the little bit of thing with ECW, I thought it was kind of cool. And just, but unfortunately, the NWA was not the NWA that we knew. It was just what many of us of that era had remembered.
Right.
So it wasn't quite as, it was never, it, it wasn't anywhere near close to what it was.
What did you think of Holly and Gunn being the Midnight Express?
I thought it was a fine team. They just buried them with stupid nicknames.
Yeah.
And I sat in there when that happened. They were like, well, try to come up with nicknames for Bob Holly and Bart Gunn. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, well, just because it was Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan doesn't mean you have to have that. Well, yeah, but it should. And then Vince was the one that came up with Bombastic and Bodacious, Vince McMahon.
It's too bad, too, because I agree with you. I think they were a pretty good team. I thought they worked well together.
Yeah.
It's too bad they got saddled with that name. I think if they had any other name or gimmick, that they could have maybe really made it as a team.
It again, what else can we do to hurt people? And these are people that Vince was paying.
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon was paying these people. Let's intentionally give them an injurious gimmick that is going to prevent them from having any hope of drawing money or being serious. But we'll pay them at the same time. Crazy.
What were your thoughts? What was the feeling, Kev, going into the first pay-per-view of the year, the Rumble in at the Shark Tank in San Jose? How were things going at that point as the year had turned? You went to the first big pay-per-view. What were you feeling? What was the mood of the company?
I seem to remember there being like, and I don't know if it was just because we got to go to California, because all through '97 we hadn't been going to too many great locations,
mm-hmm.
but. You know, Lowell, Massachusetts, things like that. Please. But when you get to go to San Jose, California, I don't care what's booked. It's going to seem pretty good.
Yep.
So that was kind of fun. And who won that Rumble?
Well, that was Austin. That was the one where it was like obvious, but no one cared because everyone wanted to see him win. I mean,
he started dumping guys out and was looking at his watch.
No, it was the year before. When he cheated at the end. This is the one where he came in. They had like the bounty on him kind of, and he came in from behind and cleared everyone out. And
all right.
I think everyone wanted Austin to win, no matter how obvious it was that he was going to win. Yeah. Also, a good push for The Rock on that one. That's where he came in the beginning and was one of the last two.
And at the time, yeah, I can't. That's one show I really just don't remember. What's the card real quick? Do you have it in front of you?
It was, well, the main event was the casket match with, and I wanted to get to that, with Sean Hurts' back.
Okay, that's history making.
We had New Age Outlaws, LOD, Rock Shamrock, Vader Goldust. I can't think of any
others.
That's
it, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it, yeah.
Crap undercard, big main event, and the casket's on fire. That's where we got that soundbite from, right?
Yes, yeah, they lit the casket up.
Got it.
Yep.
Do you think it was wise to go back to Michaels Taker again, or do you think they had kind of had their fill late in 97?
That's why they did the gimmick match. You know, and it was more about Kane.
Right.
It was more about Kane setting the casket on fire at the end than the actual match itself.
And that ended up costing Michaels. Do you think he was going to get hurt anyway, or do you think that was really the main reason?
That was the reason it was attributed.
Mm-hmm.
That was what they always said. I've seen guys take worse bumps. Just saying, I haven't taken bumps myself, so I can't really be a critic of anybody who does.
Right.
But I've seen worse bumps, and maybe it was just his time. Maybe that was whatever it was that put it over the top. Maybe there was something tragically wrong. There's always a part of me, though, that was like, I'm not really sure. Anything with Sean, I had to take it with a grain of salt. Never believed anything until, you know, you saw it with your own eyes.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that was tough. And we knew that he was in a lot of pain. But I wasn't sitting there staring at his, you know, x-rays and MRIs and sitting down with his, the team of surgeons either. I didn't know.
Was the severity known right away, or was it kind of like, oh, it's Sean, he'll bounce back? Or did you realize, or did anyone realize that, you know, this was going to, like, lead to a serious time off?
If it was... It was very high up and not well talked about. That was not something that was public knowledge, but I think a lot of us started to figure it out. Especially when we got to, when we knew that he was losing to Austin, then that was like, okay, there's something seriously wrong with Sean's back. It must be legit. And it was only after the fact, though, I think we were able to point back to that. That wasn't a big deal that was made of at the time, right?
Yeah. No, it definitely wasn't.
That bump on the casket?
No, I don't think they even really mentioned it at the time, like during the match or anything. It was just the fact that all of a sudden he was not wrestling, and then we'll get to No Way Out in a minute, you know, where he's pulled off the card. But let's progress there. Scott, you want to take the next one?
Yeah. Before we get to that, let's move ahead to the next night on Raw, Kevin, which, of course, is one of the seminal moments in the history of the show, and it was actually a highlight clip Monday night on their 20th anniversary show. When Austin got in there, I got a little slang language. So here's to ya. And then, of course, they had the big brawl and it was in the front of the USA Today. And what were the plans? As far as you know, what were the plans for Mike Tyson? Was he supposed to wrestle? Was it supposed to be him and Austin? What was the original plan for him coming in? And were you thinking that was going to swing the balance, bringing Tyson in?
I didn't think that it was going to swing the balance, but it was certainly going to be a good thing. Just from the mainstream press coverage that we got, you know, ESPN, the cover of USA Today, every national media outlet. I think that was one thing that really helped turn things. Plus, it boosted everybody's confidence in the company. We needed these continuous lifts to be able to raise this balloon. It wasn't just one event or one thing, but it was the series of them and needing to have that reassurance that we were going to get there. This was just another one of those episodes. Plus, it was pretty cool when Mike Tyson was overheard saying that he wanted to have unlubricated anal sex with one of the young production assistants. That was a highlight of my day.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Never disappoints.
No.
Do you think they could have ran him and Austin in a match?
No, it would have been horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. But I think what he did, the way he was booked, it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, they did use him really well with the whole DX tease. And then, I mean, it was obvious where it was headed, and it was still, this whole first like quarter of 98 was some of the most obvious booking, and I'm glad that they followed it. You know, it's rare that you say that, but they just did it to a T, and they, you know, they were met with the reward. So when was it decided? Was it already at this point that Vince was going to go full-blown heel and become a character, or was that after Mania when they decided to go that way?
I think there was a lot of – I think Vince Russo wanted it. I think Vince Russo was really quietly pulling McMahon into that direction. Now, McMahon he went willingly, that's for sure. But it was never McMahon's decision. It was somebody else's decision made for him. And he went willingly along the way.
Now we head to Houston and No Way Out. And at that point, obviously it had come out that according to Sean and his DVDs, that one day it went from not hurting that much to not being able to get out of bed. What was the chatter going into that pay-per-view about Sean and his status?
The status, the idea of how do we spin this? Do we tell everybody ahead of time? Because I think it was the week of, a few days before. What do we do? How do we say it? Do we say it? Is it bait and switch? Is it not bait and switch? What do we say? How do we say it? And it was just, I don't even remember what was settled or when it was decided or who made the decision. But I know that there was a lot of talk about how do we not hurt our pay-per-view audience and at the same time get as many people as we can to buy this pay-per-view thinking that Shawn Michaels is going to be on the card, even though we all knew he was not.
And yeah, I'm sure it worked out buy wise, but I remember being pretty pissed off as a fan ordering it because, I mean, it's one thing to announce on the free for all Sean's out, and then they kind of teased a mystery guest or mystery replacement, and they pay off with Savio Vega at the match, and it's like, if you're gonna tease it, you're gonna deliver better than that. Now, if they just came out right from the beginning and said Savio's replacing him, that's one thing, and I get why they didn't business wise and at a time where they needed all the money they could get, but. I definitely remember being really upset about it at the time. Like, I mean, no slack on Salvio Vega, but come on, that's a pretty big drop off.
Write your congressman, kid. Nobody cares about you or your pain. Tell your therapist.
You're such a jerk. Just for that, I'm going to write out a whole fantasy booking with the Warlord in the fall of 1990.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah, you know, and listen, I felt bad for all the fans. But what do you do in a situation like that? I don't think anybody's been ever able to say, I definitively know the correct answer. Here's what you do.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, so, you know, it's poor Savio. Felt bad for him. But he was a company guy and did what he was told and did the best he could. And everybody shouldered on as best we could. We knew we had Mania right around the corner, so hopefully we were going to be able to forget about that pretty quickly.
And it ended up being a great match. That's the thing, too. So that kind of soothed things over, I think, when the match really delivered. And, I mean, everyone just wanted to see Austin. And in a way, it kind of worked because they were able to keep Austin and Michaels apart. I don't know if they were going to touch anyway in that match. But, yeah, I just felt like they were a little more honest in the free-for-all there and said it was going to be Savio. Maybe they would have been less hard feelings. But speaking of hard feelings, Ahmed Johnson at this time was fired after the show. Was it true? The rumor out there is that he refused to job to Kane. And that's why he was turfed. Any truth to that? Or
I don't think that was the final reason, but I don't remember that to be exactly the case, but there was some sort of conduct unbecoming a professional, I can't remember exactly what it was. It probably was something related to that. Ahmed was one of those guys that you wish you could, you want to pay him what he's worth, but then, what is it? Then have him actually be what he thinks he's worth. What is that saying? How is that? He basically was not worth 10 cents in Chinese money.
Right. But you wanted him to perform like he thought he was worth the millions that he.
Thank you. Yes.
Something like that.
Mm. Yeah. Now, another guy that we want to talk about who kind of was going back and forth and you know, gimmick changes and what have you, was Jeff Jarrett. Now, we were just talking about him with the NWA thing. Obviously, after that happened, they rebooted him. What were your thoughts on that?
Poor Jeff. He never recovered from the whole Austin thing, and he just went from one thing to the next to the next. And Vince Russo was his boy and was trying as hard as he could to get Jeff over. And every little layer along the way, and Jeff, you know, to his credit, he shouldered on as best he could, made the best of everything, was trying to prove that he could be there and could perform. I mean, he continued to have great matches. But whether it was putting the Godwins with him as, you know, suit and tie bounty hunters or, you know, thugs on the outside or whatever it was that they did eventually to Deborah, all those. It was what it was. I always liked Jeff, though. Jeff entertained me personally, professionally. I like Jeff Jarrett, every bit of him.
I felt bad, too, because it made him look so stupid, because when he came back in 97, he did all that ranting and raving about that character that he hated so much, and then, you know, less than 6 months later, he's back in the gimmick, with on the horse with the light-up hat and everything. It just looked kind of stupid at the time.
Yep, and in an era where we were moving towards reality, realism is best, you know, whatever, it was good because it kind of stood out because it was very different, and I think that by doing it, Jeff maybe was trying to pay some penance. I'll do the silly gimmick again and see me in a different light, but nobody was ever going to see him in a different light because Austin was not going to let anybody see him in a different light.
Still the issues creeping up there. So.
Oh yeah. He never forgotten. He hasn't forgotten today. I guarantee you somewhere on Broken Skull Ranch, you know, there in Texas, Steve would think about Jeff Jarrett and would have a four-letter word cross his mind.
All right, so let's move on to WrestleMania 14, Kevin, of course. Really the hallmark, the beginning of what would officially become known as the Attitude Era. Let's kind of just work through the big matches on the card. Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. Now, Funk was in as Chainsaw Charlie. Everyone knew the gig. Do you know, I believe Foley says in his book, and there's, you know, rumors out there that they're actually supposed to wrestle each other in some kind of either death match or gimmick match, and then they ended up teaming to face the Outlaws. Have you ever heard anything like that?
That might have been talked about. Again, it goes back to why was he called that? Well, because they didn't think that Terry Funk's name had any value or whatever, and just lunacy. But poor Terry, you know, he did the best he could. with Vince Russo's stupidity. And so here we were. But, you know, again, they had the dumpster match before this, right? Or was it afterward?
This is the dumpster match. Before this was that whole...
They shot the angle where they threw him in the dumpster and then shoved him off the stage.
Yes.
That was pretty cool. That was really cool. It was fun. Anytime, you know, that, and I think they really loved working with Terry and Mick.
What are your thoughts on...
You know what, Scott? I put that there. Let's save that one for the end of me.
Yeah, I was confused. Yeah, I thought about that too after I was in the middle of writing it. All right, next. Kane and Undertaker. Obviously, the build growing and growing. Taker wins, but it took 3 tombstones. Was that it for Kane after this? Was that supposed to be just this quick little run? Taker beats him and then Kane leaves? Is that originally what the plan was?
No, I think they really thought that the Kane character had legs and had a lot of depth and a lot of places that it could go. The idea of him beating, of Taker beating him would then lead to more, again, the over the years, the facts have faded in the background. But where did we start to learn more about the saga? Where did the saga turn?
I think it was, I want to say it was right after this with the whole thing where they reveal, or where they dug up the parents' caskets and they threw Undertaker in the casket. And then
that was my idea, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
I like that.
I take credit for 2 creative ideas while I was there. Well, 3. One was suggesting to Vince Russo the first Vince McMahon Stone Cold Steve Austin match, which we did in Philly, right?
Yes, we're going to get to that.
Yep. Then the other idea that I had was Kane and Taker and digging up the parents and bringing the caskets to the show. And then the third one was Triple H and Stephanie getting married.
Wow, you had some pretty big ones.
That was pretty good, right?
So yes. you're to blame for Triple H now going to be the owner of the WWE.
Yeah, so yes. You're giving him crap, and you pretty much gave him the keys to the castle. So there you go.
And you're happy. You love it.
Right. Yeah, thank you. See, so you could give me grief, but I'm going to love you as who you are
right,
for the rest of your life.
It's so awkward. You're like Manti Te'o.
Oh, isn't he awful? It's the worst.
Creepy. Hey, let me ask you guys a question though.
Yeah.
What else did I do? Oh, and I also came up with the idea for the Kiss My Ass match at SummerSlam 99, at least the stipulation. No, I came up with the idea for the match. Vince Russo was yelling at me about something, and he's like, all right, you're big Mr. Creative Guy. Why don't you come up with an idea for a match between Rock and Billy Gunn? I'm like, oh, that's easy. Why don't we just have a Kiss My Ass match? The loser has to kiss the winner's ass. And he was like, a good idea, and he couldn't say no. He couldn't say, I hate you, get out of my face. He's like, oh, that's pretty good. Then they wind up doing it, of course.
And they used the large woman, as Jim Ross would say.
That was, and I'm sure we'll tell this story sometime later on in the year, but they plucked her out of the crowd.
Really?
Yeah, they found her outside and said, hey, fan, would you like to be on the show?
And have your ass kissed by Billy Gunn.
Here, put this on. And here. No, it's not because you're fat.
No.
No. Here. Hey, look. Shiny lights.
One of Scott's fake girlfriends.
See?
So
I'm ignoring it.
Oh, God. I thought the casket thing was good, though. I really am not just saying that because you came up with it. I thought that was a cool visual when Taker was chokeslammed into the casket and all the dust flies up and everything, and that added a little more heat to that feud.
Fans hated it at the time.
Well,
I remember
being,
oh, I know. Well, listen, you complained about Shawn not showing up in February. Give me a break.
Well, that's a big difference going from Shawn Michaels to Savio Vega versus Undertaker getting chokeslammed in his dead parents' casket. I mean, come on.
All right.
Yeah, there was money involved with the Savio thing. That's why.
Well, that's why he's upset. I didn't pay for it, but
we gave it away on Raw for free. The caskets, right? So yeah,
it was all worth it.
All right. The main event, I thought was a great match, and I think most people did, even with Shawn at like 75%. He seemed to start off the first 5 or 6 minutes pretty good, and then there's one bump where Austin throws him in the corner and he takes his Shawn's usual flip, and he didn't flip. I mean, his back went square into the turnbuckle, and pretty much the last like 14 minutes, he's pretty much walking pretty gingerly. Was he as hurt as he looked in that match?
I don't know. Like I said, I never saw one x-ray, and I'm not any, you know, I'm not a doctor. Mm-hmm. I can't say whether or not somebody's back is hurt. But there were people that just didn't believe Shawn for anything. The Undertaker was sitting at gorilla position, and I think I've told this story here before. The Undertaker was sitting at gorilla position just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case there was some nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that if, you know, and they made like special arrangements. They kind of squired Shawn away into his own dressing room, which was unheard of at the time. Nobody got their own dressing room. Shawn Michaels did that day. And I don't know. Sure did look like it was hurt, though. And I think that it would I'm probably 80% sure that it was hurt. Maybe 90% sure that it was hurt. And maybe there's just like 10% of doubt, you know? But that's Sean's own fault. Sean made us all not believe in him.
Right.
And made us distrust, you know, lacking trust of him. So shame on him for putting us in that position to doubt whether or not he was legitimately hurt.
And that would be it for a while. I mean, he comes back later in the year. We'll get to next time we have you on. But as far as in-ring now, he's done for nearly 4.5 years, which is amazing when you think about it. So that show, do you think – I know your answer is going to be – I'm going to ask it anyway. If Austin had fought Tyson, defeated him – with all the mainstream coverage it would have brought and everything else, even more possibly than they had, and then won the title the next month, do you think his legacy and everything would have been even bigger, the same, or worse?
I think it probably would have been the same. I think it wouldn't have been as good. Shawn needed to be defeated at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Austin and professional wrestling needed to be front and center, and the WWF title needed to be front and center. A gimmick match with Mike Tyson at, you know, sure, at WrestleMania. I just don't think it would have meant – it would have been steps backward for the company, because at the time it was a competitive war with what were we trying to do, and WCW found that out when they started bringing in Dennis Rodman a few years later.
Right. Well, it's funny because you know, at the time, it seemed like it would have been such a huge deal. And the rumor was that maybe Shawn would face Owen and Austin Tyson. But I guess you're right. I mean, I think you had to make the title. Maybe any other year, you would have said Austin Tyson would have been the bigger draw, except for this one particular point in time where Austin needed to finally win that world title from Shawn Michaels.
But I never had a problem with how Tyson was booked.
Right. Oh, no. He was booked perfectly. I have no argument there. I'm just wondering if they would have had that match if, you know.
But think about this. We had all those press conferences and everything, you know, and all the press and the media that was done for this event.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the sound bites from Mike Tyson, he sounded like either he was half in the bag or completely illiterate. Right. He had no idea who he was talking about or what he was talking about or anything. Can you imagine that would have been your main event for WrestleMania?
No. Well, yeah, probably not.
He had to throw one punch, take his shirt off, and do the DX chop. Thank God. He had to count three.
And he still that botched the three count.
Well, it was a little quick.
Yes.
So, but anyway, so could you imagine if he would have had to do a whole match? Forget about it.
It was great, though. It definitely swung the tide, so.
Didn't we have a Pete Rose sighting at this WrestleMania?
Yes, this was the first one.
With Kane and Taker.
Yes, this was the great one where hits the Bill Buckner line and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was
City
awesome.
Of Losers.
Losers, yeah.
How about it?
How about Pete Rose's new reality show? Have you seen that? What a train wreck.
I've heard it's really awful. I have not seen it.
I didn't even know we had one.
It's hits and misses or something like that where he's engaged to some stripper-looking broad who's got a kid. And oh, my gosh.
What a mess.
It's horrible. Oh, poor gosh. Pete.
I wonder if they'll let him into the Hall of Fame this summer because he'll be sitting there doing his autographs at the store down the street and there's just nobody there.
Yeah, it'll be the only one.
Pete, we got some chairs. Want to saunter up here? Who knows?
I think they're going to I think they should – just not let anybody in. We're going to go this route. Fine. The whole steroid era, nobody gets in. Screw you.
And I think it'd be even better as if they finally relent and everyone realizes, all right, you know, these guys belong in anyway. They vote them in And then Bonds and Clemens say, no, F you, I'm not going in. And they reject the enshrinement. That would be the...
That would be the other thing, yes. That would be even better.
So screw you.
But, just baseball's a mess. Everything's a mess nowadays. Why can't we have anything nice?
You're right.
You got Ray Lewis. How about that? That's a good story. I like that one.
Yeah, I'm hoping they win this weekend.
I think most people do. I think most people, people south of Connecticut hope they do. Does WrestleMania 14 stand the test of time, Kevin, as the seminal show that turned the tide?
There was something lacking about that show, but it was pretty damn good. I don't think we were there yet. I think we got there later in the year. We were starting to turn the tide later on in the summer. Mm-hmm. But, that was pretty good. That damn main event, you know, for what Sean allegedly was battling through and what we all believed he was at the time, you know, that was pretty damn gutsy. So, that was good. And the Austin era had begun and everything was JR had the perfect call. So I think it was exactly right. And I think that match certainly holds up over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kane and Undertaker, you look back and you go, I don't know. But entrances were cool. I think I helped book some of the druids. I think I had a hand in that. I was usually involved with the druids.
Big fan of the druids.
Hey, we need druids.
Go find them.
Go find druids. Okay.
Well, you know, your friend John Walters was a druid at WrestleMania 20.
See? Exactly. We've had quite a... one day we'd have to put a list together of everybody that's been a druid, a security guy, a something. I saw Robbie E. from Impact make a little cameo the other night on the 20th of Raw as a security guy getting beat up by Edge, I think. With Rick doing Ric Flair impressions.
Oh, that's right. That was a great segment. The when he was mocking the drunk driving or whatever. Or the
out in the street. That's right.
Yeah.
The also the gangster. Remember, CM Punk was one of the gangsters at WrestleMania 22 when he came out with John Cena it was John Cena they did the whole gangster thing with and everything.
Yep.
All right.
How about that?
Yep. All right. Night after Mania, of course, always a big deal. This is to me where it really started to become. A huge deal was after this one. And, of course,
yes.
We have the return of X-Pac, the rebirth of DX. Triple H usurps control. X-Pac comes in, cuts that awesome promo, ripping Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, and everyone else. Do you think the new DX was better than the original and any other memories of that night?
Not even any close. Not a second of doubt. But it wasn't X-Pac that made them. It was the Outlaws. Without the Outlaws, DX was nothing. The Outlaws were bigger than DX. Shawn Michaels was bigger than the Outlaws. But Triple H? He was a flunky. He was a hanger-on. He was nothing. And then they got Freak China that nobody ever wanted to look at. But as soon as they put the Outlaws with him, it clicked. It all turned. Without the Outlaws, DX would have never been as big as they were. And that night was awesome. That's called heels getting heat, boys. That's what the business is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Handcuffing baby faces to a cage and beating the holy hell out of them over and over and over again. That's how you do it.
And I agree with you on the Triple H thing. I'm not really just trying to prod Scott. We talked about this when we were doing one of our reviews, either Over the Edge or something. And I said, I really thought at this point, you know, they positioned him as the leader. But I know you're saying the Outlaws made DX, but I always looked at X-Pac as almost a de facto leader during this time because he was the most vocal with things. And once he started getting in the ring, he was, I thought, the best in the ring of everyone. So it took a while for Triple H to really become looked at as more than just, you know, the lackey.
It did take a long time for him to become more than the lackey. But at this point, I thought X-Pac, he cut the one great promo, but then it was downhill from there. And then he just became stick out his tongue, do the DX chop, Bronco Buster. And that was pretty much what you got. He became the DX, the Nation of Domination parody of DX. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's what he became. And that was why it was easy for them to spotlight, you know, let's make fun of X-Pac because this is all he does. Jump up and down, tongue out, crotch chop, Bronco Buster.
He was over though for a while there.
Yeah, but again, why did he not stay over? because he didn't change, because he stayed just doing that one thing, and that was it.
No, you're
exactly
right.
People got sick of it.
Yep, he got very stale quickly.
Speaking about another faction, Kevin, and this is actually going to break your heart, but when your boy Farouk got booted out of the Nation by The Rock, and The Rock took over, what were your thoughts on that? Was it just the natural way of doing it? Was it a necessary move?
Yeah, it was, and because I think the belief was is that they were starting to try to line up people to wrestle Austin that had some credibility, and let's get him back to being Ron Simmons, the world champion, or maybe we could do something like that. And then it got derailed, changed, and he somehow wound up getting put with Bradshaw, which wound up being great because then they formed the Acolytes. But, you know, listen, Seminole Nation is resilient. We're proud, and we bounce back quite well. So I wasn't too worried about my man Ron.
He's your boy.
Absolutely.
Yep.
As he would say to me, fellow alumnus.
He had a tough year in 98, but you're right. By the end with Bradshaw, which we'll get to, he definitely finally turned things around, I thought, and that's when he'd get himself into better shape as well and get going. So, yeah, Rock takes over the Nation and really takes another step forward as to being a star. Thoughts on the night now? The ratings war changed. WWF got the win, and that is the night that you speak of in Philly with Vince's first match with Austin, all the great stuff backstage with Patterson and Briscoe training him and Shane arguing not to do it. And then the tease with Dude Love coming out or Mick Foley making his return and coming out. Thoughts on that night as a whole?
I was pretty heavily connected that night because I had thrown the idea. Russo and I went to lunch at the A&W Root Beer at the Connecticut, the mall, the Stanford Mall. And he was just like, he didn't know what to do, couldn't come up with an idea. Just trying to jog his brain. And I was like, all right, I'll throw something at you. What if Stone Cold comes out and says, Vince, you strutted down to the ring wearing that belt and you won a corporate champion, blah, 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 blah. I think the person that you're thinking about is me. It's yourself, rather. I think that's you're thinking about yourself. You see yourself as as the champion. You want to be the WWF champion. You probably put the belt on and strut around in your underpants in front of Linda. Hey, Linda, look at me. I'm the WWF champion. Well, I'll tell you what, Vince, now tonight's your lucky night. You think you're man enough? I'll give you an opportunity to become the corporate champion. You face me tonight one-on-one. We do this the easy way or the hard way. The easy way is you come out and you face me. The hard way is I go back there and I kick your ass. What's it going to be? And I just expected Vince Russo to look at me and go, I hate that idea. You're stupid and horrible. I hate you, and let's have root beer. And instead he was like, wow, it's really good. How am I going to sell Vince on this? And so we ate lunch and went back to the office, and he went upstairs and he waited for Beth Zaza, Vince's longtime assistant, to give him the all clear. And Vince saw him. He pitched it. And Vince said, okay. So he came back downstairs. He was like, he went for it. It's like, holy shit. That's pretty cool. So that was that. And, then they came up with all the fine tuning of how to draw it out and eventually leading to Dude's turn, which I didn't know anything about. But, you know, nonetheless, what are we going to do for a main event? Well, let's book Mr. McMahon versus Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF title. You're not going to get a bigger main event than that on TV.
No, definitely not. Scott, I just watched and reviewed that. It still holds up, that whole build. And I thought the highlight to me was the Patterson and Briscoe teaching him the leg whip and everything else in the back, teaching him how to counter the stunner. And to me, that was some of the best part of the night. I remember the A&W well. When we moved to Stanford, we went there. We were apartment hunting. It's up in that upper food court area, right?
Right. Great mall. Horrible town.
Yeah. Oh, awful. I hated living there.
Stanford is one of the worst cities in America.
I absolutely do not disagree with you. It is, and I have to work there every single day. That A&W is gone now. In fact, the mall's been totally redone, and there's a new food court and new restaurants. And the city still sucks, but the mall's 10 times better now. So
the problem is they think they're New York City, and they're just not. Everyone acts like they're in New York City. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, it's Bridgeport.
Ugh.
It's a couple of traffic lights, more than Bridgeport.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Pretty much. Terrible.
Is they still have that Holiday Inn there in Stanford?
It is now I think it's a Sheraton now.
That was the wrestler hotel for all the stuff at the studio.
Yep. And then there's the Beverage Barn across the street from the from Titan Towers that everybody says. I think Fink used to say that everybody would go there to get their beer before they hit the road. The Beverage Barn right across the street.
Did you ever go to the Bennigan's down there near the mall, Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
Always went there. They closed it, though.
Yeah. Yep, they closed that Bennigan's.
All the Bennigan's are gone.
Yeah, it's too bad. I liked Bennigan's.
Yes.
The Monte Cristo.
Delicious sandwich.
Oh,
yes.
The batter dip, deep fried club sandwich.
I remember my friend finished the Big Irish and won us a free dessert. I'm surprised he didn't die that night.
Oh, my God.
That was a nickname of one of Scott's fake girlfriends, by the way. Big Irish.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
That was awesome.
Oh, man, she was a whole lot of woman and potatoes. All right. let's talk about another character, Kevin.
Red hair and can throw a hell of a right hand.
Exactly. Middle name was Seamus, I think.
She wasn't that pale. All right. Another character, Kevin, that started to come on the scene. Some awesome vignettes, and then really took off as a character. V Squared, the great Val Venus. Talk about him. Talk about the character.
He was a guy that was found at the first little camp that we had in Stanford, and Dr. Tom and Dory Funk Jr. had invited some guys who had. You know, the office knew well and wanted to see what they could do and make a final determination on before we hire them. And so Sean Morley and Adam Copeland and Jay Riso and who else was not contracted at the time?
Was Draw part of that?
Yeah, but I think he was already signed. I don't know if he was part of that one. He might have been a later one. But, you know, then they had like Mark Merrow attend and Tiger Ali Singh, I think, and – you know, just to fill out the ranks. But anyway, those were the core main guys. And I think the Hardys were at the first one too. Yes, the Hardys were at the first one. But getting Edge, Christian, and Val Venus out of the first little camp that we had wound up paying dividends and was the birth of the talent development department. And that was great with some weekend shows. At least one set of shows that Kowalski helped promote up in your guys' neck of the woods. But yeah, then they can't. I'm not sure where Russo came up with the character for it, but he did. And the vignettes and everything, and hello, ladies. And I mean, that's just great branding. Just tremendous branding. So, and I think Val did all right with that gimmick.
Yeah, he did pretty well. It's funny because Scott and I just talked about this. They tried to, you know, start him as a heel, thinking maybe he'd be like Rick Rude or something. But at that time of you know, the 90s, that was a guy that was going to get over as a face, you know, banging everyone's wives and talking about, you know, sexual innuendos and everything else. There was no way he was going to stay a heel for long.
Well, that was the whole thing, was trying to come up with ways to, you know, have him do these outrageous things that just were, but there was no limit to what you could say he did, you know, because it was just like anything he could have, you know, he had sex with the Kayentai, Yamaguchi-san's wife. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome. Yeah, Val was a great character. My gosh. He had that ceiling, though. There was a ceiling. And I always said part of that ceiling was his name.
Oh, definitely.
That just like we're never going to hear WWE champion Dolph Ziggler, we're not going to hear, we didn't hear WWF champion Val Venus. And we could have. We might have. Maybe. Maybe not. But he certainly wasn't even a main event player. He was intercontinental at best.
And then by the time they tried to take him out of that Venus character, it was probably just a little bit too late.
Oh, yeah. Way too late. Because by then he was Val Venus to everybody.
And he was a good wrestler. There's nothing wrong with his ability. He was a fine wrestler. But you're right, you know. Once you're a gimmick, you're always a gimmick. Good or bad.
That's all you need to know. That's exactly it, Scott. That's what you need to say. Once you're a gimmick, you're always a gimmick.
Yep.
So here's a guy that was part of that dojo. See if you remember this name. Glenn Kulka.
Oh, yeah. Poor Glenn. Booked him in a main event in his hometown in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and forget who he was going to wrestle, and climbed the rope, and yay, and jumped down and broke his leg.
It was the Jackal.
That's it. That was the end of the match.
Yeah, right here. After suffering a broken leg during a match with the Jackal in Regina in 1998, Kulka was forced to undergo corrective surgery. Out for 6 months, and then he came back and went as part of the dojo.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of buzz around him. You know, CFL football player, tough guy. Hearts had trained him. Brett had a lot of made recommendations willingly of guys that he thought were good, and Kulka and Don Callis were two, and I think he also recommended Kurgan.
Mm-hmm.
And guys that he had worked with and trained, or at least had a help and, you know, a hand in training.
It looks like a guy we'll get to next time around, probably Test was part of that as well. Andrew
Martin. Was he part of the first one?
He might have been the second one, it looks like.
Yeah, because that was definitely a Brett
influence,
and Andrew had told that story many times. But
Tony Jones as well was involved in one of these from Beyond the Mat. So, anyway. All right, let's move along. Where were we here? We talked about Val. So Unforgiven 98 is our next pay-per-view. Did you like the Dude Love stuff where he was went anti-hardcore again, went against all the Mankind, Cactus Jack things, and started preaching that he was a corporate guy, came out with the glasses and the fake teeth? And what did you think of that whole Mick Foley stuff?
Oh, it was so much fun. It was so great, you know, and that, and Mick was really beginning to overcome, you know, kind of the soreness that he felt from over, you know, the years in ECW in Japan. And I think his body was starting to heal and he was coming around, and I think he was enjoying and was really for the first time seeing kind of the showbiz side of things, and how, you mean I don't have to take crazy bumps and light myself on fire? Hey, I like this. Dude Love was like stealing money, though. My gosh.
Yeah. Especially the heel Dude Love. It was really well done with all the stuff with Vince, him and Vince dancing up on the stage with the dudettes and everything, all the slutted up. And yeah,
I think Colette was a dudette, his wife.
Yeah, she definitely was at one point.
Yes. And as were the seamstresses, Terry and Julie.
Hmm.
Terry, who became Draz's wife, and then she divorced Draz, and now she's married to Shannon Moore.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, another guy that came in that was actually quite popular and doing well in another promotion, that was Dan Severn, who was actually the NWA champion at the time. He obviously came in with Cornette. Do you think he was ever going to click? Do you think that was an opportunity wasted? Did they not do what they should have done with him? What were your thoughts on him?
I think that at the time, with Vince Russo having a hand in Vince McMahon and being in his ear, Dan Severn was not going to be taken seriously. And Dan Severn's lack of personality was going to be played up and exploited as much as they could. Vince McMahon never heard of Dan Severn. And I may have made this point on this show before. Vince McMahon doesn't know anybody unless he sees them in his monitor screen on Raw. Then he knows them. Otherwise, he's never heard of you. He doesn't know who you are, and he doesn't know what you're all about. So Dan Severn, he never heard of, oh, who fought who? Shamrock. Shamrock was in UFC? What's UFC? What's in the next segment? Seriously, that's Vince.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he didn't know who Dan Severn was. People told him, I'm sure, but he could have cared less. Yeah, just let's try it. Absolutely. Guy's got a lot of belts. Good. Looks like a tough guy. Looks like he could fight. Oh, he certainly can. He's, you know, amateur. Yeah, amateur. That's bullshit. Right, Briscoe? And then they would laugh and joke about that. These are the imaginary. These are the conversations that I'm sure they had. Amateur wrestling, that's horrible. That's stupid. Right, Briscoe? And then Briscoe would have to defend amateur wrestling, you know, playfully. It was all bust Briscoe's balls. Try to make Briscoe throw up any chance they could get. So, no, there was no chance for Dan Severn to get over in this atmosphere because Vince Russo was in Vince McMahon's ear. Cornette was behind Severn. Severn had no personality. Russo could have cared less about Dan Severn, and he was booked accordingly.
Any thoughts on Draz joining the Legion of Doom and the return of Paul Ellering as well? All kind of just desperate attempts at this point.
Desperate attempts, yes. Anything to try to get Draz to do something. Because Draz was liked and well thought of. He did a lot of training there in Stanford. He had pretty much moved and relocated to Stanford and was a long-term project, taught how to wrestle from his football days at the Broncos. And how do we get somebody like that with that unique look and athleticism to fit in? And we got to find something for Draz. Okay, let's put him with LOD. Why not? Yeah, why not? Let's see if we'll see what happens. See if we catch lightning in a bottle. Maybe that's a bad pun when you talk about bottles and LOD in this instance. But nonetheless, it was what it was. And Draz got a lot of good experience out of it. He really learned a lot from those guys.
Now, when Owen Hart was kind of cruising along here. You know, he lost all those matches to Triple H, and at that point, I think they had run their course. He then, of course, turned heel, joined the Nation. Based on his character and what his strengths are,
he's coming at you.
Sorry, I had to.
Did you think it was destined to happen based on what Owen Hart's strengths were, that he was eventually just going to turn heel again? Was the face turn kind of cut too quickly, or was it just destined he was going to turn heel because that's what he probably is better as? And what did you think of putting him with the Nation?
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was destined that he would go back to where he was and should be. That was his rightful, you know, spot. And he was the first guy to go, correct? That it wasn't it's because sometimes these factions could feel like a dumping ground for what do we don't know what to do with them. Like, let's put draws with LOD. I think with a lot of it had to do with Severn, right?
With Owen?
Yeah.
That came later, I think.
That was later on?
He turned on Shamrock, I think, to join the Nation. I think he just explained it by saying, like, he was tired of being alone. His family had left him, and he wanted to have backup again, basically.
There you go.
Because DX had been beating the shit out of him.
Right. Made sense to me.
I thought it was a good fit. I mean, superficially, it doesn't seem like a good fit. But by that point, the Nation wasn't about just, like, what it started. You know, when it started, it was about the Black Pride and all that stuff. And by this point, it was just a gang of guys that had each other's backs. And I thought Owen fit well in that group.
Yeah, he could certainly, you know, again, helping teach Rocky some things and get him more experienced and assist D'Lo. And who else was in the group at that time?
The Godfather was, and Mark Henry.
Oh, Mark Henry. Yes. How could we forget Mark Henry?
What did you think at this point? You come back from that injury finally, and they turn him heel and put him in here. I thought this was the first time he really started to have a decent fit.
Who, Mark Henry?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, no. It was horrible.
You thought so?
Why was he in a group of five? Let's cover him up as much as possible and put him around some experienced guys who know how to work.
Obviously.
Put Owen in the group. Jesus, at least we can get decent matches out of him. What are we going to do? Get decent matches out of Godfather? You know? D'Lo Brown, he's green as grass. He can't do anything. Mark Henry, by God, he's horrible. Rock, we don't want him doing all the work and beating him every night. Who's going to do the work in this group? We need Owen.
Where did the Godfather thing come from? Because one week he's Kama. You know, still just doing the Kama Mustafa thing. And then DX does the parody, the awesome parody. And part of the parody is they have him portrayed as this guy, the Godfather, with the hat and the cigar, and then all of a sudden he starts becoming a pimp from there. Like, was this a real life thing or an inside joke? Where the hell did it come from?
It came from him. It's who he really kind of was. You know, like, he wasn't the stereotypical pimp that he portrayed, but he had a pretty strong pimp hand and certainly knew that culture from working in strip clubs as long as he did. And was a worldly man of the streets, as it were. So he knew exactly what to do, and he wanted to be cool, and he wanted to be different. And I think Vince Russo, I think it almost flew under the radar. Like, he's what now? The Godfather? We better change the graphic.
Right.
Back
right.
it up, you know, and K-A-M, no, backspace, T-H-E, space, G-O-D-F-A-T-H-E-R, Godfather. Eh, makes sense. He's the Godfather now. What the hell?
It worked.
It worked.
He, as Michael Cole would always say, the fun-loving guy who loves to have fun, and the ladies he likes to have fun with instead of playing the hoes. That's one of the women Godfather likes to have fun with.
Well, that was the thing. We called them hoes on one show or at one time, and then another time they couldn't. They called them ladies.
Probably SmackDown or something, right?
It was like a SmackDown thing, or it was, but one just internationally, I don't think we could call them hoes.
What a fun time.
A lot of thought, trust me, not a lot of thought went into these things.
But they worked. Maybe that's why they worked.
Thank you.
Yes.
Two things that we've learned. Scott said, once you're a gimmick, you're always a gimmick. And the other thing is, maybe that's the reason why it worked, because we didn't think too much. It's very simple. Just let it go. Be very simple. At its core, professional wrestling storytelling is very simple. And that's what this was.
All right, so we move on to Milwaukee and Over the Edge.
Well, actually, Scott, one thing we just skipped was the DX Nation stuff.
I thought we had enveloped that into that. All right,
The DX skit, the parody, and then all the invasion stuff with WCW. Just thoughts on that, Kev. Basically, DX turns face here.
Pretty much badass. Pretty much. Pretty much did whatever we wanted to do at that point. It was so much fun. It really was cool. Everything that was, again, everything that everybody had hoped things could become had become. So, finally, you know, finally winning the war by this point. It turned. Once it turns exponentially.
All right, so now we move on to Milwaukee and the Over the Edge pay-per-view. This is when we started really seeing the rise of Sable. JR and I have mentioned the last couple pay-per-views about Sunny was kind of stumbling. We'll get to her in a minute. Talk about the rise of Sable as a character standalone and then the angle with Mero and then bringing Jackie in. What were your thoughts on that?
The Mark Mero, smartest man in the world, when he came to get to sign his contract back in 95, I guess it was, WWF, he brought Sable with him. And Vince, you know, eyes bugged out of his head. Of course, Mark, yes, you're a big star. Here, $350,000 a year. Oh, and I got plans for you, too. What's your name? And so the seed was planted right then and there to eventually one day do something with Sable. So we started to see, you know, Sunny was, had gone through her run. China had come in. She could work a little bit. Do we want to have more women? Sable wants to wrestle a little bit. Okay, fine. We got Jackie. We could do something with her. And the, so they found a way to come up with to get her to be sort of that standalone, stand on your own woman, and then get her into doing different things. So yeah, that was it was pretty good stuff.
I loved that whole thing where Mero pretended like he was going to let Sable pin him, and then he pins her and celebrates like you won the World Series.
Right.
Great. I loved Mero as a heel. There is this, just a guy in the era of the cool heel. He was just a dedicated douche. That was such a dick. Like I thought it was. I loved it at the time. I thought it was so great.
There was, I think pieces of her luggage got crapped in, or maybe it was him. I can't remember. I think it was just her. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But there was a lot of, yeah, there was a lot of bad feelings around when Sable started getting that push, because them jealous women, boy, they don't, man, oh man. That cattiness in that women's locker room. They weren't divas at the time either. They were just women. Mm.
And it was around this time, too, where Sunny faded. They had the thing with the LOD, and that didn't last, and she ends up just heading off to ECW. We talked a lot about her in the past, but any final thoughts on Sonny's run here?
No, but I'm happy she's engaged with What's-His-Face.
She's engaged now?
Oh, you didn't see that on the Facebook?
No, I don't think I'm friends with her. Is it the guy she was stalking or whatever?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
Oh, God.
Good for her. God bless.
Yeah, hopefully she'll stop going to jail.
Breaks my heart. I wonder if she'll move to Connecticut now.
Oh, God,
or if the guy got thrown out of Connecticut. All right, now the main event of that show, probably one of the first real great Attitude Era main events. Austin and Dude just went all over the place and just chaos around ringside, and you had Taker there, and he's chokeslamming guys. Just everything, there's all this crazy shit going on, and the place went bonkers. What are your thoughts on that main event? Because that really was the first true bona fide paint-by-numbers Attitude Era main event match that they would use as a template for the next like 3.5 years.
Was that the one where we put all the pieces in place? No, that was...
Yep.
Yeah. So Patterson was the ring announcer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Russo
Briscoe
and I,
was a timekeeper.
Yes.
Timekeeper
Russo,
and Vince was
Russo
the ref.
Russo and I were writing those introductions in the afternoon
that Pat read.
Oh, you did a great job. And Pat delivered them flawlessly bad.
Yeah.
So it was great.
And just the idea, you know, like the beating tom-tom of the heart. Well, oh, my God. But we were, as seriously, guys, as we were writing them and we're doing the Pat voice, you know, not pronouncing S's, no A, the letter H doesn't exist in the French-Canadian vocabulary, tears pouring down our eyes as we are trying to get through to write these things. And all we kept hearing in our own voices that we kept saying them, reading the lines back, was Pat saying them. It just flowed. It was like so easy. But kept stopping to cry and then pick up and write some more and then finish it. Here you go, Pat. This is what you do.
And that's when all the plugging with the Briscoe Brothers Body Shop started. A lot of great. I mean, Patterson and Briscoe were just fantastic starting here. And They play their roles like just so well. I don't know.
It's worth the drive.
Definitely. You know who does the rare ends, as Jim Ross would say.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so a great, phenomenal match, and the arena was just insane for that match. And when Undertaker chokes Patterson through the table, I didn't think Patterson could ever, you know, get that much height on a move. And just a great, great match.
Yep, absolutely. What town was that in?
Milwaukee.
That was in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good times.
Yeah, to me, that, like, WrestleMania starts the Attitude Era, but to me, this was like, that was the first pay-per-view that really kicked off the Attitude Era. That was like the first wild pay-per-view and just great main event, I thought.
That was a Pat Patterson cast of thousands, as we used to say, the Cecil DeMille production. Let's get ref bumps involved, and let's have, you know, the one finish that they do 8,000 times and never do it well in TNA. That's a Pat Patterson finish, and that's what we saw there. And, you know, his brilliance, Pat, was he always laid out the main events. Great job.
Main events and rumbles. That was his forte.
Yep.
Main events and rumbles.
So going from the main events to the undercard, Kai and Tai comes in. Of course, Men's Teo and his fake girlfriend. Funaki, Dick Togo, and then Taka was involved with them. Turns heel. They do the pee-pee stuff with Val Venus. Did you like them as a group? I thought they added a nice touch to the undercard.
Loved them. In fact, that was where we that was one of the greatest lines of all time. Bill Banks, who I think still works for TNA, he was young writer and worked his way up at WWF. He was we were driving Yamaguchi to the building, and I was driving in the rental car, and I forget how they got on the conversation in Japan or something like that. And where do these guys come from that they used to do? And Wally was like, yeah, they worked in Japan, blah blah blah. And then Bill Banks like quoted like what they had done, and, you know, like reading their bio by heart, he knew it. And Yamaguchi says, oh, you a big mock, huh? So I almost wrecked the car and then got to the building, and I think found Russo as quickly as I could. I said, oh my God, wait till you hear this one, what Yamaguchi-san said to Bill Banks' car. What? And, you know, there's Billy with his red ears getting all embarrassed. Oh, you a big mock, huh? So that's still to this day like a line that we use.
Oh, that's hilarious. So it's out there with the pee-pee line then, right? Choppy, choppy, your pee-pee?
Yeah, how do you write that? That's just brilliant. Choppy, pee-pee.
And then John Wayne Bobbitt with the save.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Horrible. But what a cliffhanger ending. People hated that. People look back now and they go, oh, the Attitude Era was so great. I just remember the comments on the AOL chat lines. They hated it. Hated it. If the babyface didn't win the main event, they hated it. And if you had stupid stuff like choppy, choppy, pee pee, they hated it.
I think
it's only now that people go, oh, it was so great.
I think a lot of it was the poison of WCW's main event throughout like 97, where every Nitro ended with a run in or a DQ or some nonsense that I feel like everyone got like hypersensitive to it during that time. Like if WWF even did it 1 week, the WCW defenders would come out and say, see, everyone does it. And the WWF guys would get all pissed off. And I think that was part of it.
Oh, it was just smart fans being a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, that too. There's a lot
that
of them.
Too. All right. From Kevin. From Milwaukee, we go to Pittsburgh and the King of the Ring. What were your thoughts on how that was booked? Obviously, this was a chance for another mid-carder to kind of shine. That mid-carder would end up being Ken Shamrock. Good choice as King. And do you think instead of Shamrock Rock, and JR and I talked about this when we did that vault, they should have did Severn Shamrock and had like a UFC feel to it? What were your thoughts on the tournament?
I think that was part of the original thought. I don't know why it changed. I don't know what happened. I only think of two matches when I think of this show. I think of the main events. So
yep.
Everything else, it's like, oh, yeah, Shamrock, King. I forgot. By this point, I mean, the only thing that we remember is, you know, Kane becoming the champion, but more importantly was Mankind Undertaker. Everything else pales in comparison. But I do seem to remember there being Severn's Shamrock talk about, you know, getting them in the ring at King of the Ring. It just sounds right.
It seemed like the booking was heading that way. Cause I remember as a fan at the time, I assumed that was going to be the finals. Like they kept talking about how they were both tournament tested and all this stuff. And it seemed like it was headed that way. And I did like how they got rid of like the goofy king stuff with the crown and the scepter, and they made it more like a legit tournament. So it kind of made sense when Shamrock won. It was treated almost like a UFC type of tournament.
Right. And it was fine him winning, but yeah, Severn Shamrock would have been interesting. I don't think those guys like each other. I don't think they really wanted to do business together. So that may have played a role in it.
All right. Thoughts on the Hell in a Cell, Kevin? Does Mankind become the star he became without this match? Thoughts backstage, what was going on? And an interesting take that I kind of had when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, the feeling that Taker doesn't really give a lot in the match, and it's really Foley taking everything. Was that by design, or is that something that was just kind of happened?
Well, I mean, what are you asking? You're asking if Taker like sandbagged on things and didn't work hard?
No. I know he worked hard, I'm sure, and put all, you know, gave what... I guess my question is, it seems like Mankind takes all the huge bumps and Taker does nothing. So I was just wondering, I'm guessing that was the design of it, but...
That was completely the design of it.
This seemed unfair.
What do you mean it was unfair? It was his choice.
Of course it was. I just felt bad for him.
He walked around. He and Terry walking around the whole damn day, and they're looking at the cell and they're talking, and Terry Funk comes walking back towards me at some point in the afternoon after he and Mick were talking, and I go, "What are you guys talking about, Terry?" And he goes, "Kevin, my God, if he hits this, if he does what he's going to do tonight, he'll be the greatest hardcore legend of all time." And I said, "Terry, what happens if he doesn't?" "Well," and he just patted my arm and walked away. So, and I was like, I just had to, I don't like that stuff. And so we watched it in the TV locker room, and Austin kept coming in and looking at it, and he would see something and he'd have to run away. He couldn't look at it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he'd come back and look at it again. Oh my God. And he'd have to run away. He couldn't look at it. It was horrible. But thank God he didn't die.
And the precision of that toss off the cell to land precisely on that announce table the way he did, I don't know. I don't know how they pulled it off.
Right. And as we know, that bump didn't kill him. It was the when he went through the top of the cell.
Yep.
And the chair hit him square in the mouth. That's what KO'd him. That's what knocked his teeth out. That's what screwed him up. That's why when they did the over-the-top retirement match with him and Triple H, they gimmicked the cage in such a way that there were hydraulics on that.
Right.
So that it didn't all collapse. And Mick may have written about all this in his books because he's a, you know, he's a book-writing fool and a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But I think his legacy was cemented this night. Terry Funk was exactly right. He'd become the greatest of all time by doing that. Nobody's been able to top what Mick did that night. Every spectacular bump off the top of a cage, off the top of anything, pales in comparison to what Mick Foley did that night.
And part of it was because it was so unexpected. I mean, you never thought that was going to happen.
No.
Ever.
Came out of no, just all of it. They're climb up to the top, they're fighting, and all of a sudden, there he goes.
And to start the match with it, too, was crazy.
Grabbed him and beeled him right off the top.
Solve this for us, because in Beyond the Mat, I don't know if Mick was just playing it off to, you know, not let on to his wife that he was as crazy as he is, or they make it seem like the cage wasn't supposed to break and he wasn't supposed to go to the mat. I think it was. Do you know, was that planned?
The hope was that it was going to break not all at once, because it was only hung by zip ties. So the idea that he would hit it and it would sort of break, and then he would fall through and it'd be able to take like more of a controlled bump.
Okay.
That was definitely talked about, yes.
The chair falling kind of threw a wrench in the mix, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, Taker's injury, he does to himself. He tries to climb through the hole, lands funny, and breaks his ankle. So he gets hurt without anybody even doing anything to him.
See, there you go. And that's the injury we never talk about.
That's right. And that began pretty much a year-long, almost a year-long run for Taker, which we'll, you know, document throughout the rest of our vaults through 98 to 99, where he pretty much dealt with pain on a daily basis. From that point all the way through till he took his hiatus the following year.
Right.
Scott does a pretty good Terry Funk as well. Scott, can we hear it?
"Oh, if Mick Foley falls off this cage, he'll be the greatest hardcore legend of all time. And if not, Kelly, well, it's okay." Come on, Dennis. Be the ref in the cage. Come on. Be the referee in the cage.
But I'm not booked, Harry.
Kevin, you're going to get us an interview with Dennis Stamp. Can you do this? We're dying for it.
I don't know Dennis Stamp. I know him from the movie. I know as much as you. I never heard of him before.
Go find him. He's the king of the cockroaches. He's going to be somewhere.
He's in a pink polo shirt and pink tights with a cockroach on his ass. Come on.
Jumping up and down on a trampoline with the dumbbells.
Oh, my. Is that one of the greatest movie scenes of all time or what?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. Never gets old.
He should do a cameo on Honey Boo Boo. That's what it feels like to me.
I don't do any tricks.
Get him in one of those ladders matches with Kevin Steen, and then he'll see what we'll see what 2013 wrestling.
There you go.
But I just jump. I stay fit. I watch what I eat because I never know when my next match is going to be. And
last one was a 91. Still waiting for that phone call. I like to picture living in a world where he's just still sitting by the phone waiting for that phone ring.
Just tapping his knee. His fingers, strumming his fingers across
that's
his
right.
Cap.
All right.
Looking,
now the main
looking at his watch.
That's right.
It's been waiting. 21 winters since my last match. Still waiting.
I've run out of gift cards at the Sizzler. I need to work. Oh, God. All right. Now the main event, the first blood match. JR and I had a little debate, not a debate, but we had some discussion about it at this vault and then leading over to the Fully Loaded vault as well. What were your thoughts on Kane winning? Did you find it, was it productive, counterproductive? Did it work? Did it not work? What were your thoughts on the, because when I watched it, I thought it was an upset. I never thought Austin would lose this match. Do you think it came off as well as it did? Was it counterproductive to Kane? What were your thoughts on that?
No, I thought it was great. I thought it was exactly what it needed because it was the Undertaker that caused it. Mm-hmm. And that's where we were going.
Right.
So it couldn't have gotten much better than that.
Do you think the one-day thing hurt Kane? I thought it kind of legitimized him, showing that he could win the world title.
I think it hurt him. Yes, I think it hurt him. I don't think it helped.
Okay.
Anytime you're a one-day champion, I don't think it's any good.
Yeah. I thought they should have let him have it through the month and then have him defend it at Fully Loaded and Austin win it back there. But plus, obviously, Austin was wrestling with a staph infection in his elbow. I'll never forget him coming down the ramp in Pittsburgh that night, and he had this gigantic thing on his right elbow, and he wrestled with it the next night in Cleveland on that Raw. So I thought it was kind of interesting. But what did you think of the whole stipulation about him getting set on fire? I was talking to JR and I were saying the way things were at this moment, because usually when you hear a stipulation like that, you're like, oh, this means Kane's winning because that's not going to happen. But I don't know, the way you guys were thinking, Lord only knows. Did you think that killed the finish of the match or no? That Kane said if he lost, he was going to set himself on fire.
Do you think it made it obvious?
No, I thought it didn't make it obvious.
Me too, because I thought it seemed like something they would do at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we both thought that, yeah.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
That was awesome.
There was pretty much nothing that they wouldn't do.
I like that Vince didn't leave it at he'll light himself on fire. I love that he threw in he'll breathe his last breath. Like, we had to add that extra dimension to it.
Yeah.
He'll die, too.
And he'll stop living.
And he'll donate his organs. That's the kind of guy he is.
Since he's dead.
It won't matter. He already has breathed his last breath. Chris Golo.
That's gotta be Kane.
Chris Golo, get your fake girlfriend over here.
Surprised you guys didn't do that as a story. Well, you did. You eventually would have Moppy and some other things. So you almost had fake girlfriends with other in other instances. But so you think that show overall, because that seemed like a big show too, that King of the Ring, a lot
That's
of stuff
gotta
happened.
Be Kane.
There you go. The last line he said before ending his pay play-by-play career. So you think that show went off well then, considering all the risks that were taken? Not just Foley thrown off the cage, but risks booking-wise and match-wise. Do you think that show went off well?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It was tremendous.
Okay.
But I think what you couldn't book like that all the time.
Right.
Because there wouldn't be anybody left. Trying to think if there was anything bad on that. I can't remember anything that was like, eesh. No, it was all pretty. Yeah. It was all pretty great stuff.
Yeah, it was one of the most memorable shows for sure of that era.
Pittsburgh was Pittsburgh got treated to the best, the most spectacular pay per view moment, I think, in WWF history.
Do you think it gets overplayed? Do you think it's shown too much and it's lost its luster?
No.
Okay.
Not for me, because I was there. Now, maybe the viewing public gets desensitized to it, but I know what Mick went through afterward. So, no. It never does.
I think he have kidney issues after that, too? That second bump? It wasn't just he went through a lot on that bump. It wasn't even just the chair to the face. Didn't he have, like, kidney issues or something?
I don't know. Yeah, he did. He had bruised kidneys, but I'm not sure if he got that through going through the table. I'm not sure. He had said that second bump was so bad and basically hurt everything that he got through the first one relatively unscathed, but who knows, you know. But all I know is that, you know, the next day at Raw and basically bringing him ice packs while he's laying on a gurney, you know, a stretcher that they had, he was in a lot of pain.
The craziest part was that they had him come out at the end of the night and interfere in the first blood match. I'm like, how's this guy been walking, let alone interfering in a match?
They had done that one thing where he had got sent into the hospital, right? Him and Funk.
Yeah, that was when they got with the Outlaws.
In the dumpster deal, and then they came back at the end of the night after being in, yeah, supposedly going to the hospital, and he's got the IV, and he's running down.
Yeah, that like...
Why not just let the heels get some heat? Jeez, yeah. Send the guy to the hospital. We got it. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that ruined that... well, I won't say ruined, because the angle itself was great, but that was, was counterproductive.
Right.
Because I used to be in the dressing room, and I used to see the old guys, and that's where I am now. I used to see the old guys that came in the dressing room that come around, and they looked like old dogs.
Great wisdom.
Instead of old cockroaches like me.
All right, Fully Loaded will be the last pay-per-view we talk about, Kev. Terry Funk leaves. Any thought on a short run here?
You know, by God, I can't do this forever. I should retire. These young guys, look at me. I'm old. They're great. You're awesome. Everybody's beautiful. And then he went to ECW.
Yeah.
Or whatever he did. Or no, he went to WCW.
Yeah. He ended up going to WCW. He was there for a while, too. He ended up being there for a few years, I think.
He fought with the chickens on his hands, I remember, at one point.
Yes, he did.
One of my greatest things, was it WrestleCrap or no? It was just somebody had called together a lot of great Meltzer comments on Nitro and Thunder recaps.
It was one of the message boards, was it?
And long message board posts. It's like, oh my God, just taking comments that Meltzer wrote out of context about those shows.
So great.
In fact, I revisit that every once in a while just to laugh.
Do you you follow Fake Dave Meltzer on Twitter?
No, I don't.
Oh, he is fantastic. You're going to spend hours going back and reading. This guy is really funny, whoever's running this thing.
I'll be doing it as soon as we get off the phone. I follow Cranky Vince.
Yeah, he's good.
I try to get as much... who else do I follow?
Fake Duggins tapered off. He was really good a while ago.
Fake Gorilla Monsoon was very good.
Yeah, he tapered off too. I haven't seen him
tapered
much.
Off. Tapered
there was actually
off.
A fake Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, you don't understand Twitter. He doesn't understand it. Don't even get into it with him. We had a whole episode of us trying to convince him what Twitter was.
You know what? You know what, Kevin? That's not what the episode was.
It was about social media and how you're inept at it.
No, it wasn't. It was about social media, period. Now you're just fluffing your own ego.
Well, it turned out being you were inept
about it.
Shut
up and get back to the subject.
Oh, God. See how defensive he gets?
Because you're making it up to fluff your own ego, which you do constantly.
What?
It was about social media, and I understood Twitter. We were talking about it.
You did not understand Twitter.
You invented a fight that never happened. And then we talked about Curb Your Enthusiasm.
This is the guy with the fake girlfriends.
Exactly.
Delusional,
blah, blah, blah. Yep, exactly. Blah, 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 blah. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the dungeon match. All right. Owen and Shamrock in the heart dungeon.
Referee, me and Brett.
I already have an arrangement.
I'm taking my aunt to the Sizzler for her birthday. All right, so I was stunned when they did this because, mind you, this is 7 or 8 months after Montreal, and we're having a match in Stu Hart's basement. How did that come about? How did you pull that off?
I think it was just pretty much, hey, Owen, can we have a match in your basement? And he said, I'll ask my dad, and his dad said, yeah. I don't think it was that hard.
That's crazy.
I really
I'm sure,
just don't.
I'm sure Stu got a check for it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There was. I think that again, there were some ideas that Vince Russo had that were his ideas to help get the talent over. And then there were some ideas that he had that he wanted to do because it just amused him. And I think that this might have been one of them. You know, because I can't see Owen like really going to the wall, like saying, oh, I want to fight Shamrock in the dungeon of my, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm thinking that like this is Vince Russo convincing Owen, who he had a very good relationship with, to get his dad to do this. And Russo, for all of his strengths and weaknesses, one of the greatest strengths that he had was to convince people of hit to do what he wanted them to do. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think that this came from. That's why I think it was pretty much, yeah, he'll do it. He'll get paid for it. Oh, okay, yeah, I figured as much. That was pretty much it.
So it
was underwhelming, though, right? Like you had built this up in your mind, and then when you finally saw it, you went, "Eh, that's it, huh?"
Yeah. Well, it barely even hit 5 minutes. It was like 4:40 something. Yeah, I guess it was tough to do such a small space. I don't know what you could really attempt, but
right.
It led to bigger things down the line. But I always just thought it was crazy that, you know, 8 months after Montreal, and wow, we're in the house. It's like so weird. I don't know. Not that Brett was living there or anything. So,
yeah. It'd be funny if he was just walking in the background, like drinking a soda or something as a wrestling.
Tries to ruin it. Kick a cable or something.
All right. So the main event here, Kevin, led us on the road to SummerSlam, kind of rebuilding The Undertaker up a little bit, changing his attitude. What did you think of putting the tag straps on him at Austin and the start to build to this Highway to Hell?
I hate when enemies wind up as the tag team champions. I hate it. That's a Vince McMahon special. He loves that idea. I hate it. Why would two guys who hate each other be good enough as a team to defeat whoever the tag team champions are? Never understood it. So, you can't take the best two singles tennis players in the world, who are mortal enemies, and put them together as a doubles team and expect them to win. Doubles tennis is much different than singles tennis.
They should do that.
Tag team wrestling is different than singles wrestling. But you don't get an appreciation for it in the WWF, WWE. So, oh yeah, it makes sense they can be the tag team champions. They're the best two guys. No, they're not, dumbass. They're not the best team. So, anyway.
Well, outside of that part, what did you think of that build to that match? I mean, it's clearly positioned as, you know, SummerSlam was really built well that year. And obviously a lot of hype on these two. The being positioned as the top two guys in the promotion easily.
Trying to find ways to get them to not touch and not want to beat each other up.
Yep.
So, that's fine. I just hate the idea of sticking two guys together and making them tag team champions when they were mortal enemies. And they're going to wind up fighting each other a month later.
I didn't like the idea either. I had said to JR when we did this vault that what I think should have happened was Kane should have fought Austin in a rematch if Kane wanted to be positioned as champion, or if they were trying to position him as champion, have him hold the title for a month and let Austin face him at Fully Loaded. Meanwhile, make Taker, if you wanted to have a title shot, make Taker and Mick wrestle like the Outlaws for the titles and forget the whole Kane-Mankind combo anyway. And then, you know, then you could build. Now, JR thought that Taker being knocked down to the mid-card would have killed the buzz. And I kind of half agree with that. But I just thought that doing that whole thing, and then Vince would do it, what, another 9,000 times in the next, you know, 12 years or whatever, just wasn't a good idea. So I concur with you on that. But do you think it would have hurt Taker if he wasn't in the main event and they positioned him somewhere else and they had Kane Austin as a main event on that show?
I hadn't thought of it that way before, but you might be right. Might be onto something. They may not have wanted to. I don't think Taker would have been worried about it. I think it may have been more of Vince's perception of Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Like Undertaker pretty much only works main events.
Or they would have, or Taker could have been the, I don't know, a guest ref. That doesn't seem
well,
like
they just had
team.
Done that with the Enforcer.
Yeah,
I just think this was the way to go because you needed to keep these two guys as the two top guys. And I just feel like there was so much hype for SummerSlam.
It got TV out of it as well.
Right.
Because didn't they win the belts on Raw?
Yes. No. They win the belts here. Then they lose them back on Raw.
They lose them back on Raw. So you wound up getting the title match on Raw.
No, I think they needed to keep him even with Austin heading into SummerSlam because they almost made it like, you know, Austin was champion, but it was almost like they were dead equals, and that's what it was almost like their Hogan Warrior. I thought 8 years later, that's how it was built. I thought throughout that summer,
and they're you know again one they don't trust each other. They each have their guns drawn
right
on each other. They have two guns in each hand. One gun is drawn pointing at the other, and the other gun is drawn pointing at their opponent, and they don't trust either side. That was the mindset.
Yep.
I don't trust you. You don't trust me. So let's not trust each other together and beat these guys. So there you go.
It's a tough booking situation, I thought, because in my opinion, because I just felt bad for Kane that I think he earned the right to be champion and only having it for a day kind of wrecked it. I thought maybe him getting like a legit title match here would have helped him. But obviously, Taker and Austin was the bigger priority. Kane was probably
right.
I don't say bulletproof. I don't know. Do you think Kane was bulletproof at that point?
He was getting there.
Yeah. Got there fast.
Great music. Great look. Great everything. Great brand.
Plus, the guys he's losing to are top guys. It's not like he was out there losing to, you know, Jarrett or anything. I mean, he's out there. You know, it's Austin and Undertaker. So
right,
he's like running that next level.
And think about, I had a point, and I was just about to say something about Austin and Taker. And then Jerry, you'd brought up the point about Kane. I was just about to say, anyway, if I think of it, it'll come back. But yeah, I know what I was going to say. February and July are always the worst months for pay-per-views because of what they follow or what they precede. Mm-hmm. And that was the indicator. You look at every February and every July, it was always a struggle. And it was always, let's try to find, that's why we want to, I think I remember pitching the idea for the bikini match or something like that for the following July. Because, you know, preceding SummerSlam, or maybe it was February, I can't remember. But what do we do for something that's going to sell before WrestleMania? You better come up with something good, but it's going to be like kind of quasi gimmicky, but it's still got to sell. So it's always tough. And fill and do TV, you know, episodic TV in the weeks preceding it.
You think they should just dump those two pay-per-views? I mean, obviously, they should cut back on a lot of them, but those are two to me that seemed like you could just do like a big TV special and just focus the build completely on Mania and SummerSlam.
I remember saying it back then.
Yeah.
What about December? Do you think that?
I don't think Rumble ever was affected by it. I thought that when we ran December, the G-Generation X pay-per-view on December 7th, I think it was. Mm-hmm. That was the earliest we had run like a December pay-per-view. And I was like, oh, see, it's great because now you got 3 weeks until Christmas. So it's not going to kill that. And then you got, another 3 weeks until Rumble. So you got a 6 week break. That's good.
And even now, they still kind of do that. The December pay-per-view is usually the latest is like the second week in. And then because going into holidays, they don't want to hit it. So it usually ends up being a good 6 weeks. So.
And it doesn't affect Rumble because Rumble's kind of a standalone thing.
Right.
And there's so many subplots that can come out of that December pay-per-view that as you get to Rumble, it plays off, you know, like it doesn't suffer because Rumble is Rumble.
Yep.
Right.
So, speaking of gimmicks, Kevin, the last topic we'll really get to tonight is the Brawl for All. Thoughts. Was it a good idea? Was Dr. Death really the planned winner? Was he set to receive a major push off of it? Did everyone realize how good Gunn was, or anyone, before that happened?
I could spend 3 hours talking about this.
Okay.
But I will give you the Reader's Digest version. The concept of the Brawl for All began because Jim Ross did nothing but talk up Dr. Death Steve Williams all the time. How tough he was, how big fighter he was, how great he was, Oklahoma. How he'd wrestled Austin, how he'd done this, how he worked when he was with Cowboy and he did this. I've seen him do this, you know. Basically, they said Jim Ross has driven both Vince Russo and Vince McMahon nuts with talking about this Dr. Death Steve Williams guy. Well, let's see how tough he is. Let's put him in a real fight. And that was the reason why they did the Brawl for All. To hopefully expose and embarrass Dr. Death Steve Williams and Jim Ross.
Wow.
Or He's as good as he says he is. I kid you not.
Wow, that is crazy. And it worked out.
Now, did anybody know that Bart Gunn was as good as he was? Only one guy did, and that was Billy Gunn, who told me before the tournament that Bart was going to win the whole thing. Now, we had all come up together in Florida, and those guys were a couple of years older than me. Bart had fought in tough man competitions, the old school tough man contest that had been outlawed. He was legit tough guy, bouncer, knew how to throw hands, knew what to do with his fists. And Billy Gunn said, he's going to win this whole damn thing, Kevin. Just you watch. And when he knocked him out, we all went, oh my God, he's right. He's going to win the whole thing. And it was almost that scene like in The Sting, you know, with Paul Newman tweaking the side of his nose, Billy Gunn looking over at me like, I told you, he's going to win the whole thing. And then I gave him the sign back. I said, yes. And then it was on from there. I mean, Steve Blackman, Mark Merrow, Draz, Flash Funk.
Braucus,
Anomalous Braucus.
God.
There was a cavalcade of stars.
And they all got hurt. Savio Vega's career was like temporarily ended in that thing.
Yep.
Henry Godwin.
Henry Godwin, Godfather. Dr. Death. Bart Gunn. Bart Gunn was the only one that got Bob Holly.
Bradshaw. Regal. I think Regal was in it. No, was Regal? No, he wasn't in there, was he?
Wasn't it.
Severn.
Severn didn't want to do it.
I think he did one and then he bowed out.
Yeah, because he didn't do any. I think.
I think he did. I feel like he won one and then we just talked about this.
Yeah, you're right. Bowed out because he knew he could win the whole thing easily.
Yeah, he fought the Godfather and then he walked after that.
Yeah, that was it. He said, no, I'm
Scorpio awesome. Was in it too. 8-Ball. Quebecer Pierre. Hawk.
What a huge lineup. I didn't realize it was, you know, there was many, you know, but everybody hated it.
16 guys were in this thing.
Fans hated it. The boys hated it. Remember the fans screaming, we want wrestling?
And the fact that it was like no rhyme or reason to it because of all the people who dropped out or got hurt. It seemed like we were never given any brackets. It was just like random matches each week and it just didn't make much sense. The music was the best part of the whole thing.
It was just an idea. Let's, you know, and then once Dr. Death was beaten, they never forgot that. And then Bart Gunn, when he got knocked out by Butterbean, Jim Ross had a big old boner. He loved it. Because Bart Gunn had knocked out his boy. And Bart Gunn barely saw the light of day after that.
Nothing. I think he was gone. And it sucks, too, because, you know, coming off, he looked so dominant and, you know, could have maybe finally found a niche. And that is, yeah, I guess the Ross.
And who was the head of talent relations at the time?
Yep,
who
good boy. Who controlled
contracts? And, you know, Vince, agent reports, it's just not working out. We're going to let him go. So, there you go.
Crazy. You think Dr. Death could have been a star during that time if he had won that thing?
Well, the idea was is that if he won, he was going to main event against Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, could he have done it without that tournament? Maybe. I don't know. Could have come up with 1,000 other ways to do it. But there's no way that Austin was taking his finish.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he'd take the stampede, but not that goddamn Japanese thing he did, that drop driver. No, thank you. So that was that. Hasta luego. Dr. Death. All right, boys. I got to wrap this up.
All right. We will wrap there then, Kev. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. We'll hit you up in a couple weeks for we'll go through the rest of 98.
I look forward to it. Give me one. What did we have? Give me one match at 98 that I can start thinking about again.
Because I'm not involved.
A match with him in it.
From the second half of 98 that we didn't talk about? All right. Here's the one that's probably forgotten, but it was great. And then Scott can do one. Rock, Ken Shamrock, and Mankind in a cage in Breakdown to determine the number one contender.
I don't remember that at all.
All right, we'll look it up. It was a very good match.
All right, Scott, what do you got?
How about the Austin Taker buried alive match from Rock Bottom?
Both guys hated it, Both guys hate Vince Russo by this point. Both guys wanted to bury Vince Russo alive. So there's a lot of story about that.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
Yes.
Excellent.
All right. Let's take a quick break, Scott. We'll wrap up with Kevin. We'll come back and do some quick football predictions. How does that sound?
All right. Let's do it.
Okay.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
So there's WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Great message board, plenty of news topics to browse, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Still Real to Us podcast, much, much more. It's the official place for the PTB headlines, and if you click the PTB gnome on the right of the screen, you will head directly to our Podbean page and our full catalog of shows. So check it out, WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Also, head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's really where PTB began. Our written reviews, the territory wars, and so much more. So head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, iPhones, Androids, whatever you got. Go to Stitcher.com for more details. We also can't forget our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. It's the best research site you will ever find. Past ring results, pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. Graham's a good friend of the show. Always help you with what you need. So that's the history of WWE.com. We can't forget our good friend Jay Wimette. Continues to battle with the, you know, the guy's a warrior, folks. For a guy who's had so many medical problems, he's always in great spirits when he's on the show. He's one of our dearest friends. There's a great way you can help him out. Medical bills are not cheap, particularly with a very unique condition like his. So head to our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, for more information. We'd also like to welcome our newest sponsor to the program, and that is the Wrestling Forum at twfnews.com. Listen, they're a wrestling forum, they're a blog site, but really they're much more than that. The guys at TWF are looking to create a wrestling media nation by affiliating with as many top-quality blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts as they possibly can. And that includes yours. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net, and we here at The Place to Be have already joined up to have our podcast featured on there as well. So go check them out and find out what they're doing, what they're about, at twfnews.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer, a.k.a. Harvey Whippleman, a.k.a. Downtown Bruno. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you don't know about our business, our industry, the WWE, our sport, this is The Place to Be. The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama said, it be that way sometimes.
Well, first they love me, and then they don't. Sometimes they do it, and sometimes they won't. So I said to this girl, hey, you get out. And she got to her feet and began to shout, you a die so bro, a die so bro. And you always lying to your friends. You a die so bro, a die so bro. And you never get nothing in the end.
All right, Nation, we are back. Hope you enjoyed that quickie round with Kevin Kelly. I think that was fun doing it that way.
Yeah, I think we should do that all the time now. I like the way we just fire off, you know, topics, and particularly when we have such a large gap of time and material to go over. It's good
and,
to kind
and
of
it's easier with 98, because with 97, a lot of the issues were backstage, so there's a lot of drama and stuff. With 98, we're mainly talking about stuff that went on screen and different characters and pushes like that, so... All right, Scott. Yeah. Let's quickly do NFL, and then we got some big announcements. We're going to talk about the board, what's going on there, and we're also going to announce our next interview, which is coming up in a couple weeks now. So let's talk NFL. We had a really good set of games this weekend. No surprises on Sunday, where the Patriots and Falcons held serve. Although a lot of people thought the Seahawks are going to win. You and I were both on the Falcons there. I changed mine after we recorded last week. Early on, I said Seattle, San Fran. I switched to Atlanta, Green Bay, so I was still right on one. You kind of convinced me with the whole stuff about Atlanta's legacy and needing to win. And you know, I really had confidence they'd pull that game out. I just thought they, you know, that team would have probably been blown up if they lost that game.
I think it would have definitely been. and I don't know if Matt Ryan would have been part of it, but Mike Smith would have been fired. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt Ryan would have gone, but there would have been a lot of changes. Maybe they would have, you know, Roddy White might have been gone. Maybe Turner. It would have been tough.
I think Turner may be gone anyway, honestly. That run by Jacquez Rogers was unbelievable.
Yeah, I like him anyway. Guys. I agree with you. I think Rogers will be the full-time tailback next season anyway. I think we'll get carries on Sunday.
Turner's just slowing them down. So on the other side on Saturday was two phenomenal games. Baltimore and Denver go to double overtime. One of the worst defensive gaffes I've ever seen in my life, where that guy let, Jacoby Jones get behind him? Or not?
Yeah.
Not Jacoby Jones. He was,
no, not Jacoby Jones.
It's on Houston. Who's the other Jones? There's another guy. With.
James Jones. It wasn't Bolden. Who the hell is the other guy? I can't think of his name. But yeah, I don't know what the safety was thinking. It was like Rod Rust defense in the early 90s.
Oh, my
the
guy, Lord.
It's like he stopped paying attention. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
And then, just quickly, John Fox. I mean, what are you doing? You got Peyton Manning twice with 35 seconds left and two timeouts, and you don't try and get a field goal? I mean, you know, Houston was able to do it the next day, and Atlanta was able to do it. It's like you have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. How are you not just taking a shot to get into field goal range, especially in Denver with the thin air?
Yeah, I know. Very weird. And finally, John Harbaugh knew what to do with Ray Rice. I mean, 27 carries, 126 yards.
Yeah.
They knew how to take advantage of the weather, but Flacco had a couple nice throws. They played a great game. They're on a different emotional level right now. They're going to milk as much out of Ray Lewis's 1.5 arms as possible.
Yeah.
And when we get into the Sunday, I'm going to expound on that. But
it was Jacoby Jones. I was right.
Yeah, it was Jacoby. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I don't know what that safety was thinking. I don't know if he was
brutal.
Daydreaming or what, but it was awful.
And then speaking of Harbaugh, his brother,
Jim,
in San Francisco, unleashed Colin Kaepernick, and obviously he was hiding some of this playbook over the last few weeks because this thing just exploded. Green Bay had no chance. You know, they got that pick six early, and then from there it was on, and Kaepernick was just running wild. He was pretty impressive to watch, and that offense was pretty impressive to watch. So let's get to Sunday, and feel bad for our boy Chad Campbell, but I can't see his Falcons beating the Niners. I just can't see it.
I don't know what to make of this game.
Niners just look so dynamic. I mean, they look like one of the best teams ever in that game.
It was out of control.
Well,
let's be honest. The Packer defense is not very good, and Woodson was kind of hobbled. And I don't think Kaepernick's going to get as much against the Falcon defense as he did against Green Bay. I'm going to take Atlanta in overtime.
Wow.
I think it's going to be a very close game. I don't think it's going to be as high scoring. I think the Falcon defense is going to force Kaepernick to have to throw the ball a lot.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I can't see this kid suddenly just coming out of nowhere and just. I don't see it happening.
He's been good all year though. He's only had a couple bad games. I mean, he lit up the Bears. He's lit up Green Bay, and he's had a good. And Seattle's really been the only team to stop him. And yeah, I don't know if Atlanta's got the personnel that Seattle has to stop him.
Well, I think the key for the Falcons in that game is to score. They have a good quarterback and two awesome
receivers. Yeah, well, it's easier said than done against the Niners' defense.
Well, it's true, but the Niners' secondary has always been a little suspect. Usually it's the front seven that's pretty dominant. If they can get to Matt Ryan and rush him, and maybe he makes some bad throws, perhaps.
I don't know.
I could see this going tit for tat, and I think the Falcons get the win, another win for their legacy. And head down to New Orleans for the Super Bowl. But it's not going to be easy. I'm not saying they're going to get blown out. I'm not saying the Niners are going to get blown out. But I don't see Kaepernick having as easy a time against the Falcon defense as he did against the Packers.
I don't know. I don't see it. I think the Niners win this. I just don't.
Okay.
I think this says it all. The fact that this is the first time since 1998 the number one seed in a home game is an underdog. The Niners are giving, I think it was like 3.5 or something like that, and you give the 3-point swing for the home team. I mean, Vegas is basically saying they're like a 6.5-point favorite, which is crazy. So I don't know. I just don't think Atlanta has the horses on defense to stop that attack. You know, if this was Alex Smith, I'd be singing a completely different story. But Kaepernick just looks great. I mean, is that offense he runs, where you have to respect his run, but he's accurate and he can throw the deep ball. And he's to me right now. Maybe I'm overreacting, but he looks at the complete package. So we'll see Sunday though. It's definitely the biggest game of his career. So,
yeah.
All right, Sunday night we head back up to New England, where Baltimore. We get a rematch of last year. Baltimore should have won if it wasn't for. Now I always forget all their receivers. Oh, Lee Evans dropped the touchdown.
The loaf of bread catch.
jackass.
I still feel bad for Billy Cundiff. He should have made the field goal, but it shouldn't have mattered. They should have won the game anyway.
Yeah, they easily should have won that game. I want to pick Baltimore so bad because obviously I hate the Patriots. And, you know, I picked against Baltimore on this show, but I did say in quite a few places, namely to Mike and Eric at work, that I thought this Ravens team had a little Giants in them. A team with a lot of playoff experience, well-coached, a kind of shaky quarterback that's shown, I'm talking like 07 Giants, a shaky quarterback that's kind of shown flashes in the past, but hasn't really had that breakthrough run yet, and that's where Eli was. I think everyone forgets, you know, in 07 what his status was. I mean, if they choke in the playoffs, he might have gotten run out of there, or he wouldn't be the hero he is anyway today.
No, I mean, remember, that was the year he threw 3 pick-sixes against the Vikings that year. I remember my father just beside himself. 3 pick-sixes against the Vikings in like week 12. That wasn't even an early game. That was like week 11 or 12.
Yeah, he was definitely on the rocks at that point. And then you factor in the, you know, Ray Lewis versus Michael Strahan comparison where, you know, Strahan was retiring and now Ray Lewis is retiring. And, you know, strong running game, strong attack mode defense, and a quarterback that could chuck it down the field. And, you know, you get that little feel from them that their experience, even though they slumped down the stretch, could take them through this. I think it's going to be a physical game. I've heard too many people picking the Ravens that is making me scared because I feel like everyone's kind of getting wrapped up in the emotion and I can easily now see the Pats winning by like 15 or something. I'm going to take the Pats under my Cena corollary that I always do. Until they're beaten, we have to keep taking them. So I think the Pats and Niners go to the Super Bowl, but I'm pulling for Baltimore.
I think the Ravens know they're the better team. They were the better team last year.
It's a bold comment. Well, last year they definitely were.
I think they're the better team this year.
Really?
I think in this game, you know, I think Patriot fans are tentative now, realizing that pretty much Tom Brady's favorite red zone target is gone. There is no Gronk. I like Hernandez. He's no Gronk, though.
Well, without Gronkowski, Hernandez is compromised. But it's funny because I see a lot of double talk here from Pats fans where, you know, they argue Gronkowski's the best tight end, but then he gets hurt and they argue that they'll be fine without him. So it's, you can't have it both ways, you know what I mean? So it's one or the other.
I think the Ravens defense shuts down Ridley in that running game. Right, Ridley? Yeah. And that running game. I think they get to Brady. I think the Patriots offense will be more disrupted than people think. And that's where Wade Phillips' defense last Sunday just totally screwed the pooch. I think he's lost his sizzle in any type of coaching capacity. I think being a coach of the Cowboys just totally like ruined him. I'm going to take the Ravens again by a field goal. I think, and this isn't just about emotion. I think deep down, Ray Lewis, John Harbaugh, Flacco, they think they're the better team. Everybody wrote them off last week against Denver. And they stuck in and won that game. I really deep down think that the Ravens think they're the better team, and they're going to go out there and play like they're the better team. And I have a feeling the Pats are kind of, I don't say they're coasting. I give Tom Brady, as much as everybody hates him, I give Tom Brady more credit than that. I don't think he thinks they're coasting. But I really think the Ravens are going to go there with an immense amount of confidence, thinking the weather means squat to them. They just played in shitty weather on Saturday, so the whole Gillette, snow, cold thing, whatever the weather is Sunday, is going to be irrelevant. I think they're playing with enough confidence, they're going to go out and win that game. And I think you're not going to have a stiff like Lee Evans to throw to. You throw that ball to Anquan Boldin in the end zone, he catches it. And I think that's what happens. So I like the Ravens 24-21.
Hey, I hope you're right, brother.
I hope so, too. Now, let me ask you something. Are you picking the Patriots because you think they're are you picking the Niners because you think they're a better team than Atlanta to beat the Patriots? Are you correlating your picks?
No.
Or do you really
no.
think
the I
Niners
really think the Niners are better than Atlanta.
Okay.
I really do. If you look at that team, the only, you know, two teams played them tough, right? Seattle and St. Louis this year. And those are the two teams that know them the best. I mean, those are the two teams that see them year in and year out. They know the system. You know, half the year was at Alex Smith. And then, you know, they adjusted to Kaepernick, and there's going to be some adjustment there, and they struggled a little bit, but he still played well. And, you know, outside of those two Rams games and the two Seahawks games where, you know, that one where they got crushed up in Seattle, you know, Vernon Davis got hurt and everything, you know, they handled the Pats in New England already. I just don't think Atlanta's tough enough to hang with them. I just don't. I almost feel like Atlanta's going to have a bit of a letdown after that win, after finally getting that win the way they got it. you know, the emotional comeback and everything. I just feel like the Niners, you know, this reminds me a lot of, sadly say, your Notre Dame championship game, where everyone's trying to talk themselves into Notre Dame. And then all the real pundits were saying, well, they played a tough schedule. Alabama's on another level. They look like completely different, like they're playing like semi-pro or something. And I feel like this is the same thing. Atlanta kind of had a softer schedule, a little bit softer of a team. San Fran has looked like they were on another level with the speed they had and the, right. the game plan they had was just unbelievable. Some of the option reads and zone reads and all that stuff, it was just crazy. And I don't know. I can see Kaepernick just chucking it and running, and I don't think the Atlanta can put up those points on that San Francisco defense.
All right. I remember last year, if we go back to our casts last January, I'm pretty sure I picked the Harbaugh Bowl. I know I picked the Ravens to beat the Pats last year. I think I picked the Niners to beat the Giants. I think I did. Hmm. So I was excited. I thought there was going to be a Harbaugh Bowl last year. I don't know if there's going to be a Harbaugh Bowl this year. If there is, I still like Baltimore to beat the Niners. But ooh, I just – well, Kaepernick left out all – well, if that happens, we'll talk about it in a couple weeks. But okay. I like Jim Harbaugh. He's kind of a dick. But you know what? Whatever. He's a good coach. He looks like a genius now because everybody thought he was an asshole for benching Alex Smith. But
yeah.
Alex Smith will be probably the Eagles quarterback. He'll be Chip Kelly's quarterback next year or something.
I don't know about that. They're saying maybe Vic coming back. But, you know, we can talk about this next week on Headlines. Yep. Kyle Forchetti will join us. So we'll have a lot of time. We'll talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk about some of the offseason stuff as well that's going on. We owe Kyle some time. So we will get into that. So let's quickly plug the board, bigelow34.proboards.com. This thing has taken off. Thank you to everyone. Answered the call. Answered the challenge. The review section is hopping. And I put it out there. Anyone who wants their own forum to do reviews, let me know. I'll give it to you. We have like 7 or 8 up there now. We started the Richer Revival last night. He'll be posting those reviews. We just have a lot of cool stuff. Our buddy Chad Campbell's getting involved with his stuff and the way the big boys play, plugging the podcast and doing match reviews. Matt's looking back, where he looks back at each year. Steve Riddle's reviews, Cole Stone's reviews, Sean Zern's doing some. It's a lot of cool stuff. Chasine's as always. And you and myself as well. So we're also going to be kicking off a new tournament. Jason Greenhouse will be running that. I think it's going to start Monday to determine the greatest wrestling theme song of all time. Ooh. So we have a ton. I think we're doing some ridiculous number. I forget what we chose. It's not going to be like a 32 song. It's going to be like 128 or something insane. So,
oh my God.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So be ready for that. Check out the message board. Scott's doing his live review blog where he's going to do Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, and Impact. And, of course, we have the challenge on the line. Every week he misses, you get to call in and punk him. So
keep not that gonna going. Happen.
And speaking of call-ins, episode 200, right around the corner, I put the post up on the Place to Be Facebook pages. If you want to be part of the show, what you do is you record a quick clip of yourself, maybe like 1 to 2 minutes. Any thoughts, you can talk about the history of the podcast, your favorite moments. You can talk about anything, wrestling, it doesn't matter to us. Record it as an MP3 and email it to me at theplacetobepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll compile those and play them on episode 200. So a lot of cool stuff planned there.
Yep. And I mean, the board's awesome. I really appreciate it. You know, we talk about this podcast and we love doing this, and this has been a great thing for my PIC and I, but the board is where we were born. We will always have a soft spot for that board, and that's why we will pimp it as much as we can. And I'm glad everybody answered me and called my. I wasn't a bluff, but I'm glad everybody called it out. And
it's been amazing. I mean, today I was on there all day answering and responding to posts, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a lot of cool stuff brought up, and it's a credit to everyone. And also our buddy Mike here as well was doing some doing Ring of Honor and other things too. So.
I want to say quickly, you and I were talking about it off mic. I'll say it. Been the last first time in a while since I've had to write something long form, other than a review. I apologize if it looked like Festus wrote it.
No, I was good. It was good. I enjoyed it.
I apologize, but
I like the format and I like the idea. So I think it'll really bring some eyes
main
to
event,
the board.
Yeah. Main event will be, well, by the time you listen to this, main event will probably already be up. So you'll have another piece of the week coming up. So.
All right, let's wrap by making our next major announcement, Scott. We have another interview. We're hoping to still do JJ next week. We're still waiting to hear back from him to do part two.
Yeah.
But we have one lined up for February 5th. Scott, why don't you reveal who that is?
Yes, it is. On February 5th, former WCW announcer Scott Hudson
will
be joining us.
Mr. Hudson, this is going to be a lot of fun because he was there through the fall of WCW. And he was there for some of the rise, too. So, you know, we get Kevin on. Talk about a lot of contemporary WWF stuff. Hudson can talk to a lot about the rise and fall of WCW. We're going to have Graham Cawthon join us again to help run that interview. And Scott's, you know, a guy who's out of the business, so I think he'll have a lot of leeway with what he can say. And he's pretty much told us that, you know, nothing's off limits. So we should have a lot of fun with that. We'll talk about some of the dog days of WCW there through 98, yeah. 99, 2000, 2001. So if anyone has any ideas for questions, you know, let me know. Put them on the Facebook page or on the message board, and we'll ask them to Scott. So that'll be February 5th, and we're still hoping to lock JJ up for next week. So,
yes.
All right, Scott, let's wrap things up. That is our part one, 1998, with Kevin Kelly. Next week we'll be back Sunday night with SummerSlam. Hopefully Dr. G will be in the house. We'll do that.
Yep.
Wednesday night with headlines, we'll preview the Royal Rumble. We'll have Kyle Forchetti on to preview the Super Bowl, and we'll go through some of the news and notes. And then possibly Thursday with JJ, we'll let everyone know if that's going to happen. And then the week after that, of course, I'll be on vacation. So we're going to try and get you three next week before I go away. And after that, we'll you know, pick things back up. So.
Yeah. Yep.
That's it. All so right. That's Scott for Kevin Kelly as well. I am Justin. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will talk to you Sunday night from Madison Square Garden.
Do you think Dennis Stam could be the third Briscoe brother?
I think he probably uses Twitter rather than you do.
Twitter what? Hashtag cockroach?
Hashtag you're a fucking moron. Baby, and how it moved through you. I've been longing for the moment to talk the truth to you. Listen, I'm never home. I always get up and go. Putting you through the unnecessary rigmarole. I never meant to put 1,000 pounds of stress on your head. I love the way we sleep and how we always cuddle in bed. Baby, I stay embracing your patience, shedding your tears with me. I ask you, my mommy, please continue to bear with me.
We started out broke, constantly on the road. Cutting up in the streets like we would never get old. Went from Lucy's and buses and 50 cent sodas and Novas to Hondas to Lexus to Rovers. Mad years past, still got each other back. Word is born, never screw none of these industry cats, boy. We like Skull and Molder, walking shoulder to shoulder, milking this game, watching our seeds getting older.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want, you know I got it. Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. As long as you want, you know I got it.
Baby,
try with you, and give you my love, and cry with you.
I will climb a mountain high, till I'm over top of the sky. So baby, come and get more close to me,
right.
This is where your love is supposed to be.
I pull up to the house in a yellow Lamborghini. It's been a few months in PA, you haven't seen me. You looking good in that Gucci bikini. 38 carats, your ring looking freezing. No matter what I do in the world, you never leave me. Fall back, ma, I make your lifestyle easy. I appreciate the things you do to please me. Looking at my daughter, you never do me greasy.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want, you know I got it. Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. As long as you want, you know I got it.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you.